I'm Anu Anand. You're listening to Outlook from the BBC World Service. Hugh Thompson is a British travel writer and explorer who's been on many expeditions to Peru in search of ancient Inca ruins. For his latest adventure, though, he chose to stay closer to home. He set off with a mule called Jethro to walk across the north of England, west coast to east coast, from the Lake District to the Yorkshire Moors, using old drover's roads and mule tracks that had fallen into disrepair. And Hugh is with me here in the Outlook studio. Welcome, Hugh.
Hi.
Now, mules, you know, they don't really evoke the romanticism of cowboys on horseback. Tell us, first of all, what a mule is, because I think a lot of people will be a little bit confused about mules and donkeys and other horse-like creatures.
Sure. So a mule is a cross between a horse and a donkey, a male donkey and female horse, to be precise. And they're very strong. So a mule that's the same size as a horse will be almost 20% stronger. And I think they are romantic because I've done all these trips in South America, often with mule trains. And the sight of that mule train, of their bells tinkling as you sort of weave up a pass, was really partly what made me want to do this. I thought, well, hey, why not have a South American adventure in England?
I'm going to ask you more about that in a second, because I imagine the two are very different. But what is it, apart from the fact that they're strong, that you find alluring about them? What are their characteristics?
My children tease me because they said, you know, Dad, you know those Philip Pullman novels where every character has a demon who represents them, who's an animal who's a bit like them, and a kind of mule is stubborn and opinionated, which is the sort of thing children say. And, you know, I do like mules. I think it's not stubborn. I think stubborn's unfair. I think they're very intelligent. You can fool a horse into doing something, they always say. Because they're not so clever, but you can never fool a mule. It's too smart to do anything it doesn't really, really want to do.
Which makes them more reliable. And the other thing I found surprising and funny was you described the scene where they're this tiny association of a mule enthusiasts in England, and they love the fact that they're not as fancy as the horsey crowd. They're really down to earth.
Yes, yes, very much. There's a wonderful British Mule Society because, of course, in Britain there's a society for everything, however small. And even though they only have a handful of members, it's definitely sort of more Essex than Badminton, so to speak. It's a down-to-earth thing, as you say.
Now, let's talk about finding a mule. In Peru, they're as common as taxis, as you point out. But you had a really hard time finding one in the UK. Why?
I was very surprised. I know. I thought that just like Peru, where there's mules everywhere, there were going to be a lot of mules in Britain. For complicated reasons, there aren't. And I suspect there's probably only a dozen per county of England. So finding one was hard work. I eventually found one as a rescue mule from the RSPCA.
This is an animal protection society.
Yes.
Here.
And they very kindly let me foster the mule, who's called Jethro, as you say, and take him off for some much needed exercise because, again, as my children would say, rather like me, he probably needed a little bit of exercise to keep fit. He'd been standing in a field for some time.
Tell us about the journey you took. You went on this very specific coast-to-coast route across the north of England. And tell us how Jethro coped with that.
So the route is 200 miles, so it's a good distance, crossing England from Lake District to the Yorkshire Moors. And obviously we broke that down in stages very carefully. Well, Jethro is a teenager. He is a teenager. In horse years.
So impetuous.
Years. So he starts off full of energy and a bit frisky and a bit impatient. And after a few miles, he started to go, you know what? This is just a little too much, isn't it? Why don't we just stop for lunch and, you know, take five?
Was it the mule equivalent of, are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what about the countryside? I mean, you were following these routes that once upon a time, you know, this is the kind of transport that would have been used to move goods across the country. Now, obviously, we've moved on a long way from that. So how has the countryside changed? What did you discover?
Well, I was shocked to find how many bridleways had closed because, of course, a lot of these were old traditional routes. But since the Second World War, almost two-thirds of bridleways, that is, tracks that you can take a horse along, have been closed down, which is a terrible shame and means that it is very difficult to do what I was doing. And I learned the hard way, because if you're travelling along what you think is a bridleway, a place you should be able to take a horse or mule, and you come across a lock gate or a stile, you know, trying to get 300 kilos of mule over a gate is impossible. So we just had to sort of turn back occasionally.
But why a shame more widely for the country? What do you think has been lost?
I think open access, I think it's a huge problem in Britain, as in so many countries in the world. Places get closed off and we don't sort of, it happens slowly and you often don't notice it's happening, so that byways and highways that traditionally for hundreds of years people could ride along and roam along, you now can't.
Now, as you say, you'd seen these mule trains in Peru, very different landscape, imagine much more mountainous. How did the English journey compare?
Well, it's not the Andes, but the Lake District provides some of the most rugged landscape that England has. And some of the bridleways there were quite tough, particularly for a mule who wasn't quite so much in training as the Peruvian mules, who would have skipped over it. So Jethro definitely had pause for thought when he was confronted by some of the higher passes there.
And what happens to Jethro? You said you were fostering him. Where is he now? Do you still see him?
It's a very good news story, and it's all social media as well, because we set up a Facebook page for Jethro. At first, as a bit of a joke, and then the joke turned against us because he rapidly got far more likes than I've ever had as a writer in many, many years. And a lot of the people along the way we met liked him and promoted him and publicised him. And so I'm happy to say there's a couple who've now adopted him permanently. And he's living in clover, so to speak, or in very handsome quarters. And it's a good, happy ending.
And finally, Hugh, I mean, you mentioned that a lot of people liked him on the journey. Did people recognise what kind of animal he was? Did you meet some interesting people as a result of walking along with this mule?
I met a lot of people. It's a great conversation point. Everyone stopped. Everyone said, "Is that a donkey?"
Yeah,
of course. So I got used to describing what a mule was. I mean, Jethro's great joke, of course, about the book, which is called One Man and a Mule, is it should really have been called One Mule and a Man. The publishers got it wrong.
Why should it have been called that? Just explain that.
Well, in terms of he thinks he was far more important for the journey, and he's the selling point.
He should have had top billing.
He should have been
the
star. He should have been the star.
Would you do the journey again?
I would, and I would travel again with Jethro. And in fact, like so many journeys, we'd really bonded just by the time we got to the end of it. I don't know if you've ever had that experience, because it takes a while. Yeah. And so we were all ready to head off for another one just as we got to the end, just as we got to the Yorkshire coast.
And just going back to mules and, you know, their relationship with this country, I mean, is it the case that once upon a time you did have more of these animals? And is it the case that they simply no longer have a sort of commercial purpose, therefore no one breeds them? Because mules are sterile, aren't they? By the time you breed a horse and a donkey, you produce a creature that can't reproduce.
Absolutely. You have to start all over again with another donkey and another horse to get one. But there's a very odd reason why there are no mules in Britain, because you get them. Many of our listeners all around the world will know that they're in South America, they're in Asia, they're in India, they're in China, they're all around the rest of Europe. The reason is because in the Middle Ages, when we had thousands of mules, they were all used by the Catholic clergy. And so come the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century, if you had a mule, you might as well have said, "I am a Catholic." And that clearly was not a good thing to say. So almost overnight, the mule population vanished. And there's still a sort of residual prejudice in Britain against mules. And it's purely religious.
That is extraordinary. I would not have expected that. Hugh Thompson, thank you very much. His book is called One Man and a Mule Across England with a Pack Mule. It's out now.